You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Making Waves.
All right. Well, welcome to Making Waves, episode 37. Hope everyone's having a great Wednesday. Real honor tonight, real pleasure to bring back someone who's been with us three times now on Shiprock. This is Sarah and Mark from the band The Letter Black. Thank you for joining us tonight and Making Waves.
Hey, guys. Thank you for having us.
Happy to be on. Thank you.
And don't forget, Justin, I mean, look, if we're going to do this, I feel like I should get an introduction of my own.
You know what? I was just about to do that. But like any good dinner party, dude, the guests come first. Okay. So here's the deal. But quite honestly, you guys have been off enough to where you're family. So quite honestly, I should have just thought about it that way. But anyway, tonight, if you guys hear a different voice, you don't hear the luscious, smooth sounds of Chad Nysville's night. You instead have the gruff, heroic voice of Al McManus. So yes. Al, thanks for joining tonight, buddy.
Happy to be here. I'm glad. I'm flattered that you're my first. I hope, be gentle.
There you go.
So guys, it's like we talked about it. You guys were with us three times. So again, thank you for coming. And third time's a charm usually, but we'll get to that. What I'd like to talk about now is the new song you guys just put out this year, Rise. Yeah. It's for people who haven't listened to it yet and you're familiar with the band's catalog, it comes out at you pretty quick and pretty hard and heavy and kind of rolls into a little bit more luscious, like kind of more of a lush sound for you guys, but it comes right back to the teeth. Tell us about the song.
Yeah, we started writing it last year and it was one of those things where, you know, the pandemic hadn't really hit in full effect yet, you know, so we were in the blissfully unaware phase of, oh, it'll blow over in a couple of weeks, right? Just everyone hunker down for a couple of weeks, it'll be fine. So it was about that time when we started writing it. And then we started realizing, you know what, it's going to, we might be in for a long haul. And as we all know, we are. And so it was one of those things where as we were writing it, we were just, I know for me lyrically, the inspiration was it stinks, but like you can't stay down, you know, you gotta rise above it. You gotta just keep taking the next step and stay motivated and just keep moving on or else you'll get left behind and, you know, fall, a lot of people falling into, you know, depression and just a lot of darkness that can come from such a serious situation that COVID has been, you know, economically, emotionally, just everything. Obviously, we all know it's been tough. So it's just an encouragement to try and keep moving on, keep moving forward and staying positive.
Yeah. And we did things a little different on this record. I know we're talking about Rise, but we did a different process because, of course, we were in lockdown. So I produced the whole record. And writing and producing is totally different when you're doing it yourself. So I really didn't have any, what's the word I'm looking for? Anybody telling me no to things like, oh, that's too much on guitar or that's whatever. The label really didn't care. They just wanted me to turn in a record, which was great.
Yeah.
So the nice part about that was when I wrote it, I was listening to a lot of Alice in Chains. I really love one of the newer songs off of Black is Blue, which is Check My Brain. And it has a guitar bend in it. Mm-hmm. And this is kind of homage to it a little bit. It has a guitar bend. When we went to set it to get mixed, the mix guy was like, it's not really a guitar riff. I said, well, it's okay.
But it's
it
cool.
doesn't have to be a guitar riff. It just sounds cool. And that was my big thing.
Yeah.
So. Let me ask you, with a song, is the message is about uplifting and staying above the fray, so to speak. When you do songs like that, is there anger involved as well? Kind of just pushing this through, like just anger, frustration?
There can be. Sometimes you're not in a place of peace. You know, sometimes you're in a place of turmoil and anger and frustration. And so, yeah, definitely. It depends song to song. Each song was written from a different place. But there's obviously frustration with this past year, you know, frustration in wishing it had never happened in the first place or that it had blown over quickly. There's frustration that we had this perfect plan of our record would have been out, you know, in fall of 2020. We had this perfect idea of, you know, all these shows. And so there's frustration for sure, personally with us, but everybody's dealing with it in their own way. And it can stem from
that. And that's the beautiful thing about rock and roll is you can take it out and no one cares. Say whatever you want to say.
Not only do people not care, but they understand, they relate, and they appreciate
the angst, whatever distress, it is.
Let me ask you then about, you were talking about taking on the helm of being the producer. It gives you a little bit of freedom to kind of like, hey, no one's going to reel me in on this. Is there a freedom to that? Or do you feel like you kind of have to like make sure you're ticking the boxes so the label goes, yeah, that's good. Or is there just basically into the wild?
Okay. So I'll tell you this. So 2010, our first record came out, and I can't even tell you how many times I chased our one big song, which was Hanging On By a Thread. And I was so tired, you know, of the label saying, well, you know, we need another song that sells, you know, 200,000 units itself. We need another big single. And all I did was chase that song as a songwriter. That's all I did was chase the song. And I feel like it made me, I don't know about you, but it made me lose perspective of what actually mattered, which was playing music I like.
It was just uninspiring, just playing, you know, go figure.
It stifles the artist. So with this record, you know, with the deal we did, it was pretty much, which, you know, I think is nice because I was tired of everybody saying, oh man, the demo sounds great. But if, you know, the recording, and then the label would say this all the time, the recording's not as good as the demo. Well, I'm not the producer. What do you want me to do? Like, I'm working with somebody. This is what they're doing. And we heard that a lot.
Yeah.
From management, from everybody.
So having him being able to be the one who has the reins, it allows us to capture the, I don't know, authenticity or the rawness of our demos, what they usually are, and make it more polished, but still keeping true to ourselves and not having other outside influences pushing us in maybe ways that aren't truly us. So I think it worked out pretty well.
Yeah.
It's interesting to hear you talk about like hey, we want a single, just a single. At that point, you're just chasing a product. You're no longer making art.
Yeah,
that's right. You know? And that's what it was for a while for us, was chasing a product.
Yeah.
Well, and the other thing too, is if you're not able to, it's hard to focus on writing a song when you also have to produce, right? I mean, tell me about that. I mean, cause I, you know, being in Nashville and having spent 20 some odd years in the country music business, right, as a huge heavy metal fan and doing the stuff that I do on the cruise, you know, living in Nashville and cutting my teeth in management and country, it's like Nashville's a songwriter town, right? It's like there are people that sit in rooms all day, not as many as they used to, unfortunately, in my opinion, but they're just sitting in a room and they're banging out song after song. They're not really, you know, there's times I hear the stories about how they're writing for a certain artist, right? But most of the time they're just trying to express themselves and come up with something clever in a hooky melody. And then it's like, okay, whatever happens, happens. So it's kind of like that. It sounds like a little bit for you guys where it's like, you know what? We were chasing this thing. Like, and I do know some songwriter friends that would sit in a room and going, hey, we're writing a song for Toby Keith. Hey, we're writing a song for Keith Urban. This is a Keith Urban song. I mean, literally sitting down to do that. And then usually the story is it just doesn't come out as good as you want it to, right? They're chasing that thing and they've learned the same thing. They're great songwriters. They just write for themselves and what they're looking for in that moment.
In my opinion, a good song comes from a place of authenticity. And if you are writing something that you don't connect with, usually it's not going to be as good as when you write something that you do connect with and something that you truly feel. That's just my opinion. Yeah. And then
you're right. What I was going to say and even what you're talking about, Al, like we have this formula, which I'm so sick of the formula. Like, here's the riff or whatever country music is going to be. Here's the verse. Here's the pre-chorus. Here's the chorus. Mm-hmm. Repeat all of that. Now we're going to put in a little bridge with something, you know, good to bring you in even more and tear you up.
The final
tearjerker. And then the little end chorus, it might be ever so slightly different, but drives you in more. Mm-hmm. And I was just like, when we released Rise, it has none of that. Like, it's, I don't even know if it has a chorus, to be honest with you. And I think that's what I like about it, is it's just totally different. It's just, it's not that cookie cutter, here it is, and here's what everybody wants to hear and what it is. It's totally
different. I feel like we have a couple of songs on this album that are like that.
Yeah, it's not just a...
Did this song come together quickly, or was it something... Because you said it started and then it kind of became bigger than the song almost, Sarah?
It happened around the time where the 2 week period, you know how at first it was like, oh, a couple weeks, it should be fine, and a month tops, and we should be getting back to normal relatively quickly. It kind of happened when reality started sinking in and things kept getting pushed back, and oh no, now it looks like summer. Oh, probably fall. Oh, I don't know. Maybe not till 2021. And so it was about that time when people started thinking of it as more of a long-term situation that I was writing the lyrics of it. So it was about
this was one of the few songs that I had the music done first before this whole record. We did differently. We actually wrote it collectively together. Typically I write all the music and I say, here you go, Sarah, have fun writing a melody.
Right.
So it was very nice of him to do that.
We didn't do that. We didn't do that on this record. We wrote cohesively together.
Yeah.
But this was the one song that I wrote on acoustic, and I showed it to her and she was like, it's okay. And then I took it and actually
and did your thing.
Did my thing. And then she was like, oh, that's really cool. I actually really like that. I said, yeah, I know. You just couldn't hear it. I could hear it.
Right. You know? Well, and sometimes it takes a demo to flesh out that idea, right? Yeah. I mean, I work with some really great A&R people over the years, and some of those cats were so talented they could just hear the hit, right? Just with a guitar vocal, and it takes a while to learn how to do that. And I would be like, the chorus is catchy, but I don't know what they're going to do with this, right?
Yeah.
So it's interesting. Do you find that that's going to be the way for you moving forward? Is that writing that style, writing that in that fashion, where it's going to be like? Because I find
it was way more fun.
Yeah, like, writing together was way more successful, in our opinion, than him handing me a song and having me come up with a melody and lyrics that fit.
Yeah.
Because this way, sitting in the room together, working it out, he would come up with the music ideas, and I'd be able to say, oh my gosh, I have this great idea. Extend this part twice as long cut that part. I'm hearing weird sound. So
you had good ideas even on with Rise. Like when we started doing it, you were like, okay, we need whatever the harmonized guitars and the choruses. You're like, there has to be something, and it has to be like Avenged Sevenfold, and it has to be something.
Yeah.
And you know, that like that was
And I cool. never got to do that before because he would always hand me the finished product.
Yeah.
And then I just had to figure out, it was like shoving a puzzle piece in, trying to make it work.
How does he handle your criticisms?
It's not criticism. It's exciting. We're both excited. We're like, oh my gosh, yeah, I hear this. Oh wait, no, I don't like that. Try this. Like, we're both excited about it. It's never this process. We never got heated and argued. The other process we actually did.
Yeah,
and I think it's because we're both frustrated because he had the idea, and I try to get an idea. So if it didn't fit, we'd both be frustrated with it.
Yeah, and my thing is, like, I'm in another band too, and my biggest thing is, the best idea wins. Like, I don't care whose idea it is, but it's just the best idea. So whoever has the best idea in the room, that's the winner, and we're going with it.
Yeah.
Right.
Which is awesome, because not everybody can be that humble, you know?
I just don't care. I want the best song.
And that's great.
And that's where the producer side of me comes out, I think, more than the guitar player, because it's like, I mean, I love playing guitar, but crafting that song and making it the best it could be, that's what I like.
Yeah, you prioritize the song over your guitar.
Yeah.
It's interesting to hear you say the best idea wins, because democracy, we always hear about it in bands. It always seems like kind of a myth. But then you hear that and you say, okay, right, you know what? Yeah. This is what's best for the people, the greater good.
Yeah.
Mark, real quick to your thing, that no memorable chorus, you don't see one on Rise, but what always takes the place of not having the big chorus is the riff. The riff is what sells that song.
Yeah.
Nice.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely. So, hey, listen, I want to go back to something real quick. And this is always a sticking point with my friends and I, maybe Al would chime in us too. You mentioned Alice in Chains. just shits and giggles. What's your favorite era? Are we talking?
Oh my goodness, Lane? That's hard. So of course it's Lane. It's gonna be. I'm sorry.
You know, I was gonna go with Will. I think Willem stuff's superior.
I love the new stuff too. I do, but you have to remember, I grew up. I was born in 83, so Alice in Chains was a huge part of my youth growing up. And then also, unfortunately, when Lane passed, I got to see Jerry Cantrell open for Metallica. I think it was in 96 or something like that. So it was really cool, that transition of, I never got to see Alice in Chains, but seeing Jerry play all those songs was super cool to me. So there's just something, I mean, you got to remember, I grew up with that stuff, so I love... I can't help.
You love the OG.
I love new stuff too. I get it. Because he sounds absolutely just like Lane, but it's still, that's Lane to me. You can't beat Lane Staley.
I understand. I just wanted your take on that. So, because I was like, wow, they pick a newer kind of sound from Alice in Chains, but good on you. So let me ask you. So the new album, we'll go on that a second. I'm just kind of curious because the last album was 2017. Is it finally kind of good? Do you just kind of have a sigh of relief when you get a new, doesn't matter the album, a new song into the marketplace after that, after like 3 to 4 years? It's like, thank God we're not rusty. We got this now.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. 100%.
Yeah.
And even more so doing it the way that we just talked about, that we did write it and record it. It's even more exciting because it feels more like us collectively as a group. So I don't know. It just, I'm excited. I feel like it's, like you said, a breath of fresh air. It's just, this is us 2020, 2021. This is the new, this is the current Letter Black.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not to give too much away. Is this the new album finished?
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
It was finished last year.
Yeah. Last October.
That's hard. That's hard.
That's hard. Not opening a Christmas gift.
Yeah, that's tough, man.
But
that's
smart. Obviously, you guys are way ahead of the curve now. It's like, hold on and putting it out. Are you guys going to, maybe a lot of bands we talk to piecemeal now, they're going to drop a song in maybe another month and then maybe 2 months just to kind of keep the fans engaged.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we have another single. We're hoping, is it this month or next month? We don't know yet.
We're waiting for
Capitol to let us know when it's going to be. Mm-hmm. But it's either going to be the end of this month or the end of next month.
Theoretically.
Once again, something changes.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's going to be the main single that we're going to push off the record.
Yeah. Which is why they want to get it right. You know.
Yeah. They don't want to screw it up. Same thing with their PR team. Like they're just trying to gauge everything.
Yeah. Because it was originally supposed to come out February 26th, the day that Rise came out.
Yeah.
And we ended up flip-flopping them because they didn't feel that it was the right time to put the main single that we wanted to push out.
With all the money behind it and everything.
Yeah, they wanted to strategize and make sure it was a good time. So, you know, it was fresh from the election. There's a lot of, obviously we know this year has had a lot of turmoil in general. Yeah. Just, I don't know.
Yeah.
Let people get past their distractions of what just went on. Yeah. Yes.
Lots happening.
And this single's going to be really great. It's the song is called Born for This. You'll love the guitar riff. It's actually the heaviest song on the record. It's a drop F.
Yeah.
But it also features
Al. That's lead. Al's department.
It's so low you can barely hear it.
You can barely hear it.
But you can hear it and it is so good.
You can hear it and it also rips off your toenails.
Is that the Meshuggah riff then? The drop F?
Pretty much that's the Meshuggah riff is drop F. Yeah.
So is it
somehow it doesn't come across that crazy heavy though. And I don't know how.
But it does feature
because it's catchy.
Yeah, it is catchy. It's very catchy. Mm-hmm. It does feature and it's a full blown feature, not just like a spot in a song.
Yeah.
Trevor McNeven, the lead singer of Thousand Foot Crutch. So it's pretty cool. Yeah. So
it's like a duet, I guess you would say, instead of a feature.
Yeah, it's not really a feature. It's definitely a duet. Yeah. It's pretty cool.
You know, there's some great band. I mean, let's take a band like Slayer. All their riffs, as heavy as they were, they had a tune. They had a melody line in there, and you could follow it. Yeah, it wasn't just chaos.
Yeah, and that's important to us.
Yeah. So, but the interesting paradigm about the whole idea of dropping a single every so often is it basically the whole album becomes singles. Because the fans get to know that song so well that come the time they see you, they go, I've heard that song. That's all I listened to for a month. How many times we get an album and just blow through it and go, I remember one track.
Yeah.
But now they're going to be absorbed. And so every single could quite honestly become a single.
It's so weird. I'm so old school. I still like to buy a record. That's just me.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because I like to listen start to finish on a record. I've never been a big single guy, but that's just the old school me.
Well, it's what we're used to.
Yeah.
And it's one of those things where the world is changing and we have to,
as a business, adapt
with what's happening now and what is relevant and what's expected nowadays. That being said, I like a whole record too. I think that some of the stuff that's never on radio
are often the coolest songs that are
on a record. But it is definitely something that's I think being pushed more and more and being expected from fans more and more. They're expecting almost a handful of singles to come out and then maybe they'll buy the record. So,
well, yeah, Spotify.
Or just stream it.
Let's call
yeah,
it.
Yeah. Spotify has turned us into, again, people turned it into that singles kind of thing, singles. It's interesting how you mentioned the old school. I remember riding on my bike down to the mall to make sure and get the new Heart single Barracuda.
Nice.
So that tells you where I was at. But it's interesting though, when you talk about technology and come to the times, isn't it ironic though, that vinyl now outsells all digital formats as far as a brick and mortar thing, yet NFTs are the new thing coming into our world, unfortunately. And I don't even know why that is, quite honestly. I'm a little lost. I like the idea of vinyl coming back.
I don't even know what NFT is.
It's a non-fungible token that a lot, like Kings of Leon just did their newest album through an NFT, which I don't understand because it's a digital kind of thing, right? It's out in the sphere, but I'm like, I saw it at the store too. I saw the vinyl. I was like, what? I don't understand the parallel.
So here's how I understand it.
Okay. Thank you.
You're paying actual money for a digital object.
Okay.
So
something that the record label should have done years ago before iTunes kind of.
Well, this is done through crypto. It's done through a crypto.
Right. But it's real. It's still real money. Actual funds are changing hands. Right. So the big one that I read about was there's a video of LeBron James dunking a basketball, right? Which, by the way, everybody can see and view in whatever format they want to view it.
Yeah.
But there is a way to digitally verify that item is the original item, right? And now that person who has paid actual money for it, whether it's crypto or not, owns that piece of digital work.
So are you saying there's only one in existence?
No.
It's almost like a download card.
No, because that person owns that piece of digital media. They own it. But it doesn't mean that it's exclusive. They just own it. It's akin to where I read it. And again, you know, this is what I'm talking about is going to be a podcast if people are going to listen to it. I'm not an expert. But how I understand it is that person now owns that piece of digital data, of digital media. So
really,
yes. And there's no real way that I understand.
Not exclusive.
So what? What Al is saying is, in this way, you can't really. If it was on YouTube, you're not making royalties from it, then, right?
There isn't a revenue part of this, guys. That's the thing that I don't believe.
Well,
it is a collector's thing. It's like having the yacht or having the thing. I own this LeBron James dunking basketball. This is mine. Look at what I have. Well, I can watch it on YouTube. Yeah, but it's mine.
Okay,
from what I understand, there's no monetization.
Yeah,
there's no monetization of this at all. It's super weird. That's my understanding of it, and I can't wait to be proven wrong. But it's super weird, and good for
that
them.
Sounds bizarre.
Yeah, it's a lot of bored people sitting around. It's bizarre. And by the way,
it goes to show you how much money there is in the world. So,
some artists just sold a JPEG of his art, a collage of his art, for $69 million to someone. So someone owes a digital JPEG. So they're not physical. It's out in the sphere. It's a JPEG, What do you do with the JPEG? You replicate it 1,000 times.
But what they do is they own it.
That's the thing.
That they're saying, I own it. No, I mean, they own the digital piece. The creator sold it to them. But so what?
So
I
can Google it and look at it. Is it like when somebody sells out their music catalog and somebody owns it in a way?
No, because there's no money. Yeah, because there's no, from what I understand, there's no reselling, there's no accounting.
So we're talking cool points.
Cool point. Thank you very much. We could have saved 10 minutes of your life.
I got cool points. Look what I have.
That is so ridiculous.
Yeah.
You got cool points.
Yeah. Cool kid. Okay. I'm sorry to bring that up. If we're talking like old school and new school, we're just trying to.
But this is why you're on OWL.
And I'm probably completely wrong, but this is my understanding of my little feeble brain.
So let's talk about future forward. What is the so with the new record? What I know we can't play anything because the goalposts are always being moved on us. What is your hopeful outcome for the rest of the year then for the band as far as touring, gigs? You get a live stream, anything like that? Festivals? What do you have planned?
Yeah, well, we already have scheduled a live stream for May 8th, and then we have our first in-person show on May 15th. We have a handful of other shows throughout the year as well.
As long as they still take place. They're all outdoors and they're all festivals. So hopefully,
and they're in states where
they're open.
Yeah, they're open. Where the states have been opened more. Mm-hmm. So hopefully they still stay open. Everything goes according to that plan, but probably no actual touring or anything like that realistically, because once you start crossing all these states and trying to have a cohesive tour that is throughout multiple states that don't have the same rules, it gets a little tricky. So
and we want to be respectful of everybody too, of just, you know, there's going to be a lot of fans that are going to be nervous to come out to things, and it's totally fine. And I respect that, and it's not a problem.
We were supposed to go to Germany in October, and that's still kind of up in the air. So it's, you know, some of it is on the books and theoretically happening, but some of it might not happen. I don't know.
Saying all of it because I just don't know.
Yeah, we don't know for sure. So,
but the festivals will have a boon because you're right. A lot of bands aren't going to be able to cross state lines. They're not going to feel comfortable getting into an indoor venue. So, the festivals you are going to do, everyone's just going to flock to those, quite honestly.
Yeah, I think we're going to have probably this year and next year, we'll have the biggest turnouts and outdoor festivals that we've probably ever seen.
Yeah, I don't know about this year, but I think next year.
I think you're going to get a lot of people there.
I think if they're open for business, they're going to be booming.
They're going to be booming. Yeah. I think so too.
I mean, it's one of those, we've never been there. Nobody's been in this situation. So it's one of those things where once it happens, we all just open the doors and wait and see what happens, you know?
I'm feeling like we should just throw a festival at South Beach. The four of us can.
Oh my goodness, you should.
The four of us can just. I mean, like, hey man.
Hey,
you know what? And let's see what the numbers dictate to us, right? I mean,
that's
responsible
honestly, that's
or irresponsible. However you feel about whatever that the activity is down there, it's a pleasant little litmus test. So let's see how that went. I'm glad it wasn't me.
And there's something to be said. It's not like anybody's being forced to go to a concert. You can stay home if you're not comfortable. Yeah. So at some point, it's going to have to happen at some point.
Yeah.
The first outdoor concert's going to happen at some point, the first indoor concert, you know? So it's just going to be these steps of somebody having to take the first step and see how it goes.
Yeah.
Hey, let me ask you guys, and I've never really asked this to any guests, what's the secret to keeping a band together for over two decades?
Being married.
Let's rephrase.
I didn't want to get into that, but if we're going to talk about it,
I do. I totally want to get into that.
Okay, let's talk about it.
I love it when we have because as a married guy myself for 15 years, I love. Yeah. Who else did we have on? We had LeJean on.
The cats from
Dead Sarah.
Yeah.
And I always find it super interesting. As a matter of fact, I mentioned a couple times with Justin and Chad that we should do like a little mini series of married couples.
There's a lot of married couples on the road.
Yeah. And it's super interesting with me. And it kind of goes back to earlier in the conversation where it's like the process of, you know, the democracy process of songwriting and how that whole thing goes down and your communication there. I mean, if you're not communicating and have a good relationship in your marriage, you're not going to have, right? I'm guessing.
No, 100%. There's no way you could write well together, work well together if you don't like each other.
Yeah.
You know, it's just not going to work.
Yeah.
So fortunately,
we do.
We'll be married.
It'll be 14 years.
14 years.
He still likes my butt. We're good.
Yeah. Perfect. Yeah.
Well, and
his lunges.
And his, you know, the jury's still out on his. And that's
okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's okay.
It's funny. I think about the only album, Al, that I can remember that worked for a tumultuous relationship was Rumors.
Yeah.
By Fleetwood Mac.
And it worked, didn't
it's
it?
The only place it worked out, because the whole thing, the whole stuff, the whole the whole album is basically them kind of yelling each other through songs, that's right?
Funny.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
If we ever hit a rough patch, we'll have to record it, right?
Oh, boy.
There you go. Yeah.
Hey, you two will love this, because last week we had Zach Wilde on the podcast.
Nice.
I say we, I mean, Justin and Chad interviewed him, and it was amazing because it started recording before. Right. We start recording and then Justin does his thing. Hey, everybody. Good evening. Blah, blah, blah. Well, before this, and Justin, I'll have to share it with you as a reminder. Zach and his wife, Barbara Ann, we also had her as a guest a while back. Mm-hmm. She's got her own podcast, but it literally, and Justin, I didn't tell you about this. It literally felt like I was watching the Osbournes.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Like when that show first came out and Ozzy's like,
I remember.
Sharon! And like, where is it? Push the button. I did push the button. You know, that, like just all that shit. Like,
he is not a tech guy.
No, but Justin, the whole thing with them was, he's like, just do it. Just turn it on there. She's like, but you have to push this button. He's like, I don't know how to do it. Just do it. Can we get it to go now? And it's just like, they're just bickering. And I was like, oh my God, it's Ozzy and Sharon all over again.
The best part about it was he has a Bluetooth speaker that he uses his phone and his song list off. And he was so afraid to turn that Bluetooth off because it was feedbacking and that he was never going to be able to use that speaker again. I'm thinking, just give that guy a guitar.
It was great.
That's right.
It was great.
That's
so
funny.
So hopefully, because I don't know if you got.
They've been married almost 30 years.
Yeah, 30 years or so. So hopefully you'll get to that point where it's just like you become Ozzy and Sharon.
Yeah.
I mean, like
the loving, bickering couple. Yeah. Absolutely.
There you go.
Yeah.
It can happen.
So guys, let's get to that point. We want to talk about the crew. So let's think back. Let's put on our time machine caps and go back to 2010. When we were half, I think we're half ship, right? We're half,
still
ship.
Half ship.
Yeah, that's right.
What was it like when you, have you guys been on a cruise prior to that?
No.
Not as just having fun. This
not
is your first
as
cruise.
Regular. Just
I went when I was a senior.
Oh, well, why'd you say no?
Well, I was not the band.
Well, I was going as a couple. I'm going to save him as a couple. As a couple.
Yes. So no,
okay.
We have not.
Okay. Yeah. So what was it like? I mean, what was it? Well, because that was the first time. I think that may have been the first year, or I did a year prior, but it was interesting coming on, being someone who's gone on cruises with my family, and then coming on this going, okay, now we're doing production. This is going to be super interesting.
I'll tell you this. This is how I vividly remember it. So we played the first night in the back of the cruise, mm-hmm. the back of the ship. It was some type of lounge.
The Pigalle Lounge.
The Pigalle Lounge, yes.
Okay, so, and going back there, I didn't realize how much the boat really moved until you're at the back of the boat.
Right.
And then you realize how much it moves. And we had not our crowd there at first. And we come out heavy and Sarah starts screaming, let's go. And I was like, I don't know how this is going to work. Like, is everybody going to be mad? Or are people coming to the stage? Like what? Because there was definitely some people there that were just probably like, what is happening on our cruise?
And
right
I think that because it was half and half, there were some people who were not prepared. Okay.
Sure. Oh, absolutely. They were definitely not prepared.
You got, you know who opened up for you that show? Bingo.
No.
I don't know, but I mean, right. It's the same lounge, right? So who knows? You probably had a bunch of people up there going, why?
Bingo.
What's your number?
Yeah. The MLS dancers.
Oh my goodness.
And then they're like, look at this cute little girl. She's going to sing a song, right?
Yeah.
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 Roar of the lion.
So, okay. They warmed up to us.
No, it was funny because then, of course, the crowd came in. Which was our crowd, and it was great.
They heard the screaming from afar, and they came to see. Yes.
And then we played on the deck.
We played on the deck
in the clam.
Cool. In the clam,
in the clam,
the
in
clam.
The clam.
Yeah. With the roof. The clam. Yeah. That's right. It was the clam. And I remember playing the whole time, and I can't remember his name because it's not the original, but the guitar player for Cinderella was watching me the entire time. He didn't like sit side stage. No, he stood right in front of me. The entire show.
No
pressure. Like no pressure the whole time. And then when we got done, he was like, "You're phenomenal." And I was like, "Oh my goodness, I just was trying not to suck because you were watching me."
Yeah.
Yeah. It was
and the whole time you're going, "Man, I'm just thinking about you on the cover of Night Songs, dude."
Yeah.
Right. So was it the original guy or was it the guy?
Yeah, who, I think it was Fred Curry.
Was it Fred's a drummer? Fred's a drummer.
Oh, Fred's a drummer. Then okay, so who was the guitarist?
Well, the singer was the main the Tom main Kiefer. Guitar player. Tom. Yeah, Tom
Kiefer. So it wasn't Tom, but it was the original guitar player. It was whoever filled in, but he's phenomenal. I don't know.
It's hysterical. And by the way, Justin and I should absolutely know this answer because you were 82, I'm 72, and Justin was 52, you know, so he should definitely know.
52.
Okay. Okay. Yeah.
You're almost right. Okay, so let's fast forward 2 years. Sure. The cruise by then had grown. We were like full big. You guys, that bill was just ridiculous, by the way.
Yeah. Oh, that was a lot of fun.
And so you guys are on now. You've got an established audience. You've got a whole crowd, a whole boat now that's geared towards your genre.
Yeah.
Pretty much. So what was the reaction like then?
It was awesome.
It was awesome. That was probably my favorite one. The first one was really cool.
Oh, the first one was super cool too.
But the second one, I think, because is that when we got to meet LeJean? Or did we meet him prior to? I can't remember
if it was the first or the second one.
I can't remember. Was 7
so wait, we did ten,
no,
we
it
did
was
ten.
The second one.
You were talking. Okay, so you did 2010. Uh-huh. What did you say? 10, 12, and
18.
And 18. Okay, so 12 was still on the MSC, on the same ship, but it was a full ship.
Yeah, it was 2012. And I remember this because we had our first child and we brought him on the ship.
Regretted it to this day.
No. He's awesome. He's such a trooper.
So Danny was with us, Danny Hill, who was our manager at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And I think that's when LeJean, that's when we met LeJean.
Yeah, it is. Because what's the drummer's name?
Morgan.
He gave our son, who was only a baby at the time, drumsticks after the
show. I've been a huge Seven Dust fan since I was a little kid. I got to see them open for Metallica a long time ago when Home came out and stuff. And LeJean knew exactly who we were. And he was like, hottest chicks in metal. He's like, Sarah Anthony.
And I was like,
I was done. And then, at that point, I was done. And then we knew the guys in 10 years because we did some things with them. Mm-hmm. We knew Brian and all them. And
we knew
a lot of the people there, like guys in Korn and POD. And I think, I can't remember if POD was on that one or not. I can't remember who was on.
I do remember
POD was on that one. Godsmack was on there.
Yeah, Korn. Mm-hmm. Godsmack, Korn that year.
Yeah, Godsmack and Korn. And Five Finger Death Punch. That was another big one. And that was really fun. Mm-hmm. But I just liked it because of all the camaraderie of all the bands. Like, it's so funny. I always feel like the bigger the band, the nicer the people, which is so bizarre. And usually the smaller the band, the more arrogant people are. But they haven't learned yet.
They haven't learned. But
like the bigger bands. Year, I remember hanging out with the guys in Tesla, and they were the coolest guys in the world. Super nice guys.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. It's definitely a place where they can kind of let their hair down, relax. We don't ask too much of them, so they can enjoy. They're with family, so it's a little bit more protective environment for them, per
se.
Yeah. Now, let me ask you, when your kid came on, did you put the cute little cans on them?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, those are adorable. Yes. I love seeing that.
Yeah, we bought him those, I think, when he was,
3 months old?
Yeah, 2 months old, 3 months old. He we took him everywhere with us when he was little, because he was the only one at that time, you know, he was our first. And so it was easy to just take him on the road, which it seems like it would be complicated, but it really wasn't.
No, because it's 2-on-1, man. You got 2-on-1.
Now it's 3-on-2.
Yeah. You're on the penalty kill, man.
Can we ask you, we always have a laugh. Did you guys get to savor the hot dog pizza?
Yeah.
Dog pizza?
Why don't we make it a broader question? Do you remember the food on the ship in 2010?
No.
Okay.
Food.
Yeah.
No.
Because internally it's like Just the food was just, it was awful. The ship was beautiful. Yeah.
But it was terrible. The first time I was on a cruise. So maybe, I don't know. So maybe,
we always laughed that it's an Italian ship, but then the late night pizza is the big thing. And they had no clue how to do pizza. It's like, you guys are like, kind of, this is your thing, right?
Yeah,
like,
I'm going to be honest with you. I think the only thing I ate the whole time there was pizza and French fries.
I had French fries and ice cream.
Yeah, daytime pizza was okay because it had traditional ingredients. Nighttime pizza became leftovers. We can't make this up. One of them was corn pizza.
How do we not remember that?
Corn pizza, hot dog pizza.
And then there was one with hot dogs. Hot dog. Be like, they're just sitting there going, these stupid Americans.
Right.
What do they know about pizza? They like, they eat hot dogs. Hey, is it the 4th of July? Give them a hot dog.
How do you not remember that?
I don't know, but I can't believe they served hot dog pizza.
Hot dog pizza. Really
fantastic. All right. So let's get to the 2018. Now you guys are really into the swing of things. You guys are like the home team. It's like you, Seven Dust, Pop Roach, and Hailstorm are basically like been on this thing more than anyone. What's it like for you guys? What's the interaction with your fans like when you meet them on the ship?
Just each year, just keep getting better and better. So I think that was the biggest thing, because then people know who you are. Mm-hmm. That's the biggest thing, you know, not just the bands, but people know who you are.
It's like festivals. When you do festivals, it's like coming home and seeing long lost friends that you haven't seen in a while. You know, you're just like, hey, how have you been? So good to see you, you know, and it's like that environment there too.
Yeah. We always tell bands that make sure and new bands, especially young bands, really make friends with these people because they know their boundaries. They're not going to get in your way. Usually like they see the first day, they're excited. Next day it's like, hey, how are you? Can I get you something? Do you want a coffee or whatever?
Yeah.
But it's the stuff that happens after, where they go to your show when you're in town and they bring 10 friends and they're brand loyal. And if you come on, you're part of that family that they're now part of. And they're the world's greatest street team. We always call them that. And they're so supportive of bands.
We definitely have very loyal Shiprock fans. Mm-hmm. Very loyal.
They let you know Shiprock. It for sure.
Anytime they see us, they remind me. Or if they're on our live stream, it's like, hey, we saw you at Shiprock.
Yeah. Part of it is a very real sentiment for me is that the guests feel like, and accurately so, that they went on vacation with you.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know,
that's very true.
Because like, think about those times, you know, you guys have probably been to the beach or been on vacation, you know, hopefully without the kids, and you meet a couple on the beach and you just spend the day, you know, drinking mimosas with them or whatever. And all of a sudden it's like, oh yeah, they're now friends on Facebook and I communicate with them and I check.
We met people like that. I think, was it 2 years ago in Mexico for an anniversary trip? We went to Mexico and there was this couple, we hit it off and we hung out, and it is the same thing. I remember when we got off, in the Bahamas, it was somewhere. I forget where did we stop over? Was it Nassau?
Probably.
And we were at a Hard Rock Cafe eating and walking around, and people from the ship were like, hey, how are you guys doing? And, you know, talking at the restaurant, or, hey, you guys having fun? Can't wait to see you all later. So it's like you're saying, it feels like family. It feels like friends. And it's an environment unlike any other, because, you know, you can come back year after year and see those people again.
So it is different from a show.
It's very different from a show.
Like you said, Al, I think it's because they know like boundaries. Because sometimes at a show, it can get a little weird.
Well, like you said, the first day is usually how it is at a festival, but then that's it, and you leave the town. This after they get the excitement out, it's like, okay, cool, we can be chill, you know.
It's
fun.
At that point, it's just a bunch of adults hanging out at that point, you know. Honestly.
Well, Justin, there was that, maybe it was it you or somebody, one of us, it was Vinny, the year Vinny Paul was on with Hell Yeah the first time, and somebody came up to someone of our staff and said, hey, it's Vinny Paul, like super Ubered out, like, I'm going to go get his autograph. And one of our staff members, heck, it may have been Alan, was like, hey, man, he's eating, hang out. We'll see him in the meet and greet, right? You'll see him later. It was like the first day, and they were just amped.
Yeah.
And I think it was Alan ran into that person later, day three or day four. And Alan's like, hey, Vinny's over here. You know, let's go say hello. It's kind of a good moment right now. And the guy or girl was like, no, that's cool, man. I saw him in the buffet. They autographed my girlfriend's arm.
Yeah.
Right.
Whatever.
Yeah. It was like, yeah, he's like, no, it's good. But that's the thing. It's like the first day. It's like, all this candy and you're like, you just slow down.
There's a great story that Chad tells when Wilson was playing and they were in Sweden, and we have the group called the Swedes, you know, all the Swedish people who come over and cruise with the Swedes. There's like 30 of them deep. And so Wilson was over there playing, and I guess they put Wilson up in their homes. And Chad tells the story of breaking their washing machine because he didn't know how to use it because of European.
Oh my goodness. Oops.
Yeah. Whoa. So always, and again, that's just a Shiprock thing. Like they met Wilson on Shiprock and became friends, and there we go. So these great stories. So he goes over and basically ruins their appliances.
Anyway. So real quick, I want to go back to y'all's. Okay, so in 2010, you had a child on board.
Yes.
You had the baby on board.
Well, 2010,
we didn't have any baby.
Nothing. Okay, 2010.
Yeah.
2012, you had one with you, and that was okay. So tell, how many children do you
13.
Have?
We have 13 children.
Have that's
three
a lot.
Now.
Three kids now.
Three children. That's all right. Because you're right. You're on the penalty kill. So so what are their ages?
Nine, six, and four.
Yeah.
Nine,
two
six,
boys,
and four.
And a girl.
Okay, and where is the girl in the mix?
The youngest.
She's the youngest, but she's the boss.
She runs the house.
Yeah,
she,
of course.
Dad, mom, and the house.
Right. Okay. So you had your baby boy on 12. Did you bring the family back for 17?
No. Three is a lot.
Look, we're 48 minutes into this, and you two have gotten smarter. Like literally. No, I'm just kidding.
It's
just
too much. Three is not so much fun on a boat.
Yeah, it's not possible.
Yeah, like when we went to Europe with one, that's fine. When we go to Europe now, none come.
None. Can't do it. Yeah.
Now, it's too hard. We never leave them more than a week. Like a week is like our.
That's about it.
If it's longer than that,
then yes, they'll all come.
But
give us a snapshot of each child. Like if you had to explain them in, you know, like three
super
words.
Fast?
Well, I mean, you don't have to be fast, but I think it'd be fun because then you might learn something.
Our oldest, his name is Judah Rain, spelled R-E-I-G-N, and that is what he does. He's super creative and inventive. We always say he's like Chris Farley, Steve Jobs, and like Jim Carrey.
Right? I love him. Right? Can we book him on a guest? Can you go get him right now?
Listen, yeah, you just give him a microphone and a stage and you would be just entertained.
He will entertain you. Yeah. And the funny thing is he looks just like Sarah. But he acts just like me when I was a kid. Yeah,
drama.
Oh, lots of drama and tells 1,000 stories.
Yeah, he never stops talking.
Okay, middle child.
And then our middle child is our youngest son. He is so sweet. He looks just like him with the big puppy dog eyes. I'm sorry, that's not rock and roll. Looks so cool. And he's just the sweetest, like quiet, very much a middle child like myself. I'm a middle child, just very appeasing. Isaiah Stone. So he is obviously what he fits his name as well. Yeah. And that is, he is steady. He's steadfast. He's
our little rock.
Yeah. He's not pushed, you know, he just steady he little stoic? Handsome boy.
Is he introverted? Yeah. Kind of quiet? Like kind of he's observer?
No, he's not introverted.
Introverted, but he's not really outgoing. He's like a middle, like he'll talk to you, but he doesn't need you. He doesn't need the attention.
I love him already.
Yeah, right? I do too. I want him as a guest.
Yeah, he doesn't need us. I'll just give him the mic.
Can you all just like bring all of your
kids on?
CLB 2.0. And then our daughter. Okay.
So her name is Audrey Grace.
Audrey Grace. She has to grow into the Grace.
Yes.
So we'll see how that goes. She's more like a princess with a left hook. Like, I don't know if it's because she has the older brothers, but she is sugar and spice. She is so sweet. She's beautiful, but she will tell you off. If she's mad, look out.
She's spicy.
A firecracker.
Yeah, she's spicy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She, and once again, she looks just like Sarah.
I don't know. I feel like she's a mix.
I
don't know.
But the
boys aren't going to know what's coming at them.
Personally. Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Look out.
Yeah. So we'll see. She only just turned four this past month. So she's still growing into her personality. We'll see how she kind of, once she hits school age, I feel like they kind of settle in a little bit to their personalities. But she's definitely entertaining too. She says some of the most hilarious things that you're just like, I don't even know how you came up with that.
And she sings everything, guys.
She sings everything.
Give us one. What did she say?
So sing, do one of her songs she sings.
Well, she repeats some of her songs. I know, she'll the current song that she just goes around singing in her like unicorn rainbow outfit is like, anymore, back again. And she'll just say those words over and over.
Yeah.
And I don't know what is back again.
Sounds like a song that Daddy wrote.
But like, and she's so passionate.
Are these real songs or just songs she kind of makes?
No, I get it.
These are her own songs. Yeah. And then she'll sing if she wants donuts or something. She'll sing to me about powdered donuts.
She'll sing about the donuts.
Like just.
She's the only child that can sing on key. And again, she just turned 4. She can sing a whole song in key. So she could take my place. But like the other day, we have a trampoline. We had a cousin over. All of them got off except one. And she watched the whole thing. And she said, there's one human left. Like, there is one human left. Yeah,
there's one human left on the trampoline.
One human.
Yeah.
It's just little tiny things all day long. That's very entertaining.
You just be thankful she didn't say, should we eat him?
Yes. Yes. Look at that.
Now listen. Now that's a whole different kind of podcast.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. And by the way, Sarah, Puppy Dog's Eyes, very rock and roll. Yeah,
very rock and roll. I know you should cut that from the interview. That's the only bad thing about being married.
That was a deep cut on a Sepultura record, I think, Justin.
Yeah, it was. Yeah.
Dog eyes.
Yeah.
Dog eyes.
You do though.
They're bleeding. And somebody ate them because if we're eating humans, we may as well eat puppy dog eyes.
Rock and roll, guys.
All right. So let's do this. Let's play Walk the Plank.
Walk the Plank.
Again, 3 questions. All and right. I'm gonna let our guest host start because he seems he's got one right there at the front, of his mind. Come on, buddy. No, you each get to answer. Each get to answer the same question.
If you could change one thing about the way you look, what would it be?
Oh my goodness.
You're welcome.
Oh my goodness, I don't know.
Well, mine's easy. I would change my nose. I'm Middle Eastern, so I'm a giant nose.
How's my nose?
So I would love to change my
nose. It's tiny compared to his.
Well, yeah, it doesn't.
I mean, I can't even see. I can't even tell. I'm just.
Oh my God, I married him. I got his nose now.
Well, the older you get, the more you start to look alike when you're married, right?
Your ears get longer, everything. Yeah.
I know. My feet, my middle toe is a little bit longer than my big toe. And I always thought the perfect feet are like.
That is such a cop out.
There's a Greek chart. There's a Greek chart that has the 3 different kind of feet, and yours fits in there somewhere. Just look it up.
Well, I like the ones that go boop, boop, boop.
Oh, you like symmetry.
But that's only 4. You said you had 4 boops. Boop, 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 boop. Well, you only have 4 toes.
We got to go.
Listen, Mark, please teach her the pentatonic scale, okay? Penta means 5. It's not quadratonic scale. Oh, you don't have 4 toes.
I got toes, guys.
Okay, that's perfect. And each one of them has their own specific
foot thumb.
Hey, I got to call bullshit on this answer because it's how you look.
But you see
about how you look.
Yes, that's your toes.
I mean, it's a good answer. It's a quality. It's a quality answer. I guess the question is more of things that people would see, right?
Your feet. Mark said, woman, high heels, open toe shoes, flip flops, bare feet. Women,
okay, fine.
Women don't very rarely
do
very
whatever
rarely.
You guys want. It's your show. I'm just a guest.
All right, so let's move on to the next question. This one's crushing everybody. Do either of you both of you, do you possess any qualities of your astrological sign?
I don't really know what mine is. I think I'm
Justin
a Pisces.
Justin knows.
I'm a Pisces, right? I think I'm a Pisces.
Okay.
And you're a Cancer. We have to look up what it is.
We're going to give you the Jeopardy time clock.
Okay. Oh,
use your phone. I'm using mine.
We're going to be twice as productive. Okay.
Yeah. Or half as productive. Sometimes it cancels each other out.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Hurry. I hear the song. It's going faster.
It is going faster.
Okay. Pisces.
You are a Pisces then.
Compassionate.
In tribute of Alex Trebek, we're going to give you a few more seconds.
Okay. Well, listen, here's what it says. It says compassionate, artistic, intuitive, gentle, wise, and musical.
Wow, and four-toed. And four-toed. There you go. So okay. You possess all of this. You don't even have to possess one of those. You possess all of them.
Yeah.
Okay. So I think mine is pretty dang spot on. Tenacious,
highly imaginative. Sorry,
loyal.
Good reader.
Emotional.
Good reader.
Sympathetic. Yeah, good reader. Persuasive. And then weaknesses, moody, which I am.
Pessimistic. You're
which
not really
I'm not. I'm not pessimistic.
You're optimistic.
I'm not suspicious.
You're not suspicious.
I'm not manipulative.
You're not manipulative, and you're not insecure. No. Well,
yeah, I am. I can.
Sarah, can you read off the negatives of your sign?
Yeah, my negatives is fearful. What do you?
No.
Overly trusting. Yeah. Yes. Sad. Do no. I look sad?
No, you're doing okay.
desire to escape reality.
I think we all have the desire to escape.
That's music. No, but that's music to me. Yes. Like an outlet. Can be a victim or a martyr.
I don't know about the martyr or
a martyr is like somebody who tries to do something selflessly, but then they end up getting squashed. I could fall into that trap by being overly.
I'm actually. This is really funny, guys. I've never looked at this before.
No, I'm just not huge on it either, but it's accurate. It is pretty accurate.
It is pretty accurate.
I mean, not 100%.
It does say, and I really do like doing this, home-based hobbies.
You do.
I really do.
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
Which is really funny. Okay.
Third and final question.
Okay.
And you don't have to necessarily want this to be your end, but okay. if you were to be cremated,
yeah,
where assuming you're going to be cremated, whether you are or not in real big kid life, okay. Where would you have your ashes spread?
Well, we actually have talked about this. Probably get just a place in a actual graveyard for the urn so that our kids can visit.
Justin, this is Shiprock Therapy right here. We're going into Shiprock marriage therapy right here. We're opening up a can of worms right now.
I actually do want to be cremated. And I think you do too.
See, and this is also covers them legally, Justin. This is actually legal proof right here.
Legal proof. And, what I want to do is, and I would say I'd just put us in a, it doesn't matter if it's in the ground or in a niche wall, like one of the columbarium walls. I don't really care.
Just somewhere for the kids to visit.
Somewhere for the kids to visit us. Because I don't want to be left on a mantle. At that point, just flush me down the toilet. It's not. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you become a part of Meet the Fockers.
Yeah, really, exactly. But I think it'd be somewhere good to just have it so that you can go memorialize, you know, your loved one at any point in this way, grandkids or anybody.
Have you given thought to like, okay, well, we'll put some of it there where you're talking about, and then we'll maybe give a few little vials to some of our friends to sprinkle in special places that we've been to or shared or, you know, or the kids go, hey, go spread it. And
I always say, and we've both talked about this, I will not be here. I don't care what you do.
Right.
Whatever you want.
Make it watching over you.
Pour it into the puppy dog eye soup that you make.
Yes. Whatever. I don't care.
I mean, we won't know at that point.
So do what you want.
Yeah. I actually do artwork, like kind of another just little outlet that I have. And I did a really unique piece for somebody. And it was a memorial type piece of art that actually had her daughter's ashes in it, and she loved the ocean, and so I did an ocean scene, and then the sand was actually her ashes, and it's like kind of weird, but kind of it turned out beautifully. Really
no, that's really cool. Yeah,
and to her, like she'll have it forever, and she'll be able to enjoy it. It's a reminder in multiple ways, and it made her happy. So yeah, there's lots of different options for for that.
Good answers. Yeah. Justin, what do you have? You're the host. What do you want to do now?
Well, I think we should let these fine folks. We've had them for an hour, and it's been fantastic. But I really like them. Now they have three kids. I feel like guilty.
I know.
It's like bedtime, guys. Yeah. Bedtime
for you or them?
Yes. To both.
Yes. Yeah. So let's do one more fun thing because this is our experiment. This is something I've been thinking about doing for a while, and we've yet to pull it off. And since
is this would you rather?
Yeah, this is the Would You Rather. So okay, I'm thinking, I think we do, we go one, ladies first, and okay, we'll switch back and forth. Ready? Okay. So I'm reading these, by the way. So Sarah.
Yes.
Would you rather have a dog with a cat's personality or a cat with a dog's personality?
Cat with a dog's personality.
Mark, if you were reborn in a new life, would you rather be alive in the past or future?
Ooh, the past.
The past.
Definitely,
that's
the
really,
past.
That's a good one.
That is.
So we should have thought of that.
Sarah, would you rather eat no candy at Halloween or no turkey at Thanksgiving?
No candy at Halloween.
Mark, would you rather
turkey on Thanksgiving?
Hey, you know what?
America.
You would rather. Would you, Mark, would you rather lose the ability to lie or believe everything you're told?
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, you get the, you got the hard one.
You would like to have that belief?
Would you rather lose the ability to lie or believe everything you're told?
I don't think I would. The ability to lie. I don't need to lie so that I can lose.
Could you imagine believing everything you're told? Okay.
I know, that's horrible. They're both bad.
That would be bad.
Oh, Sarah, would you rather be free or be totally safe?
Whoa. Oh, man. Because okay, that's kind of like really relevant with the whole everybody government watching us everywhere we go, you know, type of thing for the sake of our safety. I don't. Free or safe? Free.
That's me.
America.
Mark, for the win, would you rather experience the beginning of planet Earth or the end of planet Earth?
Oh, my, the beginning.
Yeah. Okay. Well, very good.
They both came in a big ball of fire, so you're going out the same.
Right.
I was going to say, either way.
You're probably going to have to pay taxes on it.
Right. Either way.
Yeah.
Oh, was that an Armageddon joke? Was that an Armageddon thing?
Yes.
What, not taxes? Taxes.
Yeah, oh, no, taxes. I don't. I just,
because remember in Armageddon, they didn't want to pay taxes ever again if they did the
job.
That's
what he said. We never had to pay taxes ever again for in our life.
No, my,
I thought Al snuck that in.
No, mine came, that I thought of that because of the Van Halen song, Sammy Hagar Van Halen, where he says, they got you coming in, they got you going out.
Oh, that's true.
I forget what.
Now I have to look that up, and I don't want to look up Hagar.
I think maybe it's on 5150.
Come on,
maybe.
Man.
They got
you,
they got you
coming in.
It's the Lane William debacle. You know, like you really want to sound good with Sammy, or you want to sound like Party Hardy Van Halen, the real Van Halen with Roth, you know?
Hey, and Mark, one last thing. You'll like this. Have you seen, and I don't even know if this is podcast worthy conversation, because what the hell do I know? But have you seen the YouTube video of the guy who is time corrected Running with the Devil?
No.
Uh-uh. When we hang up from our phone, our call, we call it, what even is this? Are we,
yes.
When we hang up.
We get off the internet.
When we hang up from the party line.
Yeah.
You don't even remember the party line, Sarah, so don't even try. It's the party line is when you were a kid, you pick up the phone to call somebody and there was already people on it.
Yes.
When we hang up from this party line, you go search Running with the Devil, time corrected. It will blow. Okay. You're my Justin. You too. Have you seen it?
I have not.
You got to watch it.
Okay,
I'm checking it out now.
It's a great. It's a great thing about how relevant and it is to today's music, where it may the machine. If the machine takes over, you lose. You can lose everything. And it's great. Check it out.
Yeah. Now I'm scared.
All our listeners should check that out too. Time corrected, Running with the Devil.
Okay. All right. So. Sarah, Mark, do you have a title for the new record coming out, or is that kind of on the...
It is self-titled, actually.
Yep.
Really? Mm-hmm. Very Metallica.
No, that means you titled it. That means you titled it yourself?
The fans titled it. How about that?
Oh, wow.
We gave them a choice. So we have a Patreon page, and we let the fans on Patreon pick between Rise, Born for This, or self-titled, and they chose self-titled.
All right, cool.
Yeah.
Well, I'm glad I asked. I'm glad I made a stupid joke.
Yeah, they're thinking about what's going to look coolest on a t-shirt.
Yeah, probably. Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
Hey, look, you should ask that question every time. I love it.
There you go.
Yeah. All right. So self-titled record. Well, actually, number 4.
Yeah.
Coming, a song at a time.
We'll see.
Coming at a time. Thank you again, Sarah and Mark from The Letter Black. This has been a really fun hour. And Al, great co-hosting, brother.
Yeah,
hey, way to go, man.
I'll come. I'll never come back.
I know. I want you to come back. You, Chad, and I together. Forget about it.
Yeah. Guest schmest.
The guests would never talk.
We couldn't get an word in edgewise.
Hey, thank you all for being here, man. It's great.
And yeah, thanks for having us. For
yeah.
You're welcome.
So guys, thank you for checking out Making Waves. If you guys are new to us, please find us wherever you can get your podcast and subscribe. That way you never miss an episode. Quickly, I want to thank, obviously, our guest co-host tonight and show producer, Al McManus, our engineer, Jennifer Zito, our show coordinator, Heather Smith, the captain, Alan Kadenig, and let's give a big shout-out to Danny Hill.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Yeah. Guys, if you're still interested in getting into Shiprock January 2022, you can go to shiprock.com and find cabins. They are still available. Or if not, hook up with some people who are looking for a cabin mate and make new friends. So there we go. Anyway, thanks again, guys. We really appreciate it.
Thanks, y'all.
Best of success with everything.
All right. Go to bed. Go to bed now.
Yeah.
Let the kids tuck you in.
All right. Bye.
See you guys.
Of Kurt Cobain,
of George Michael, of Otis Redding, of Amy Winehouse, of Michael Hutchence, Bob Marley. This is the story of Prince.
It's a new podcast series
about how they died, why they died, and why we're still talking about them so long after.
It's like nothing you've ever heard before.
It's storytelling.
But it's more than that, because rock stars,
they tell us how we feel. They change our mood.
They change the clothes we wear, the people we hang out with,
the way we remember things.
It's them who give us those ludicrous moments, the ones where you're
jumping around, singing your heart out, feeling understood.
And it's those moments we'll help you remember, the ones you're thinking about right now.
That feeling.
That feeling.
It's coming soon from Crowd Network.
Just search for Death of a Rockstar on your podcast app
and subscribe now.